Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
It is a Wednesday, and I can't recall a day I had this many tasty topics. We are live in Los Angeles. This show's called The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Thank you so much for stopping by. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. Some days we have good topics. Today's one of those days. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm great.
Watched the Miami Hurricanes lose again last night. Very disappointing.
Yeah, they do that sometimes.
A lot, yeah.
I started a master class yesterday.
A what class?
A master class.
What's that?
It's like all these really successful people like teaching you about their crafts. Like you can learn acting from Samuel L. Jackson, Gordon Ramsay as a class. I'm taking the Neil deGrasse Tyson class.
On scientific thinking
and communication.
Look at you. You're one of the most ambitious people I've ever met. You really are. You're
I
very
like to
ambitious.
Learn stuff.
Yeah, you're just a very ambitious go. You're jumping over hurdles in life. Just
I try.
I'm on the back nine. it all seems like too much work for me. I want to start with this. I have opinions. Sometimes I'm right. Sometimes I'm wrong. But I will remind you of both every Monday, second hour of the show. I'll remind you when I'm right. I'll remind you when I'm wrong. I think you all owe me an apology. I'll get into it later. So when Andy Dalton came to the Dallas Cowboys, I said he'll be the best backup in the league. He's a great backup. And you can start him occasionally and win games. And I said the gap between him and Dak, not very big. That was met with outrage. And I came out and I said, let's go to their first 4 years when both Dalton and Dak had good offensive lines and good support. And when I threw up the numbers, I won't read them all for our radio audience, but you can see them here on the screen. They're virtually identical quarterbacks. I mean, now it should be noted, Dalton played in a more run-centric league, Dak in a little pass-happy league, so Dak's completion percentage higher. Same guy. And I've always said, Dalton throws a better ball, Dak's a better athlete. And I like Dak more than Dalton, but it ain't that big. So Dalton comes to Dallas. Now, this has been a weird year. No preseason. This has been hard for rookies, for free agents. It's not really fair to judge anybody in September and October, right? We've said this about the draft. I mean, there was no games. So, and also the Cowboys had a new staff. Andy Dalton got a concussion. Then there was COVID. So I don't think it's really fair to judge Andy Dalton early in the year. Even though Dak went 1-3 to start, in the fifth game, they're playing the Giants. Dak gets hurt. Dalton comes in, and if you recall, led them to a win. So for a week, you were like, Colin, I hate to admit it, you're kind of right. But then it unraveled. Then concussion for Dalton. He got COVID. The Cowboys went to backups on backups. Then they had a bye in week 10. And I think that's fair to say it was 10 straight practices. The chaos ended. I mean, there was at one point, we didn't even know. We thought the team was bailing on their defensive coordinator. That was a big narrative on this show and every show, every network. Like, the players are quitting. But then they had the bye, and byes generally, everybody gathers around 10 straight practices. It's like a little bit of a preseason without a preseason. Andy Dalton since then, since the bye. 6 games, 4-2, 67% completion percentage, 13 TDs, 4 picks, passer rating of 102. Oh, my friends, that's Dak. Let me ask you right now, if the Cowboys win Sunday, 7-9, they're a playoff team. Dak started 1-3 and was trailing. If he would have played no Dalton, just sitting on the bench, Andy playing Dak, what do you think, they're 8-8? I mean, they ain't 12-4. They're not 11-5. You watch their defense. Dalton's the better pure passer. Dak's the better athlete. And here's why it's important. Because if the Dallas Cowboys offered Andy Dalton a $37 million contract, they would lose fans. Jerry would need to sell the team. It would be an outrageous, outrageous proposition. That's what Dak wants. It's not that I don't like Dak. If you paid Dalton more than $18 million a year, it would be widely criticized by everybody. Dak wants over double that. And he's not twice the player. That is the Dak dilemma. I'm not anti-Dak. I'm anti what Dak wants for what Dak is. Last six games for Dak Prescott and Andy Dalton. Go to their last six games. They have identical records. They both complete about 67-68. The TD to interceptions, both 13 TDs, 4 picks. The passer ratings, Dak slightly higher. But Dalton's won another game. I like Dak more. Dak is better. Dak's a better athlete. And in 2020, I think Dak feels like the NFL more than Andy Dalton. But if Dak didn't get hurt, wouldn't Dallas be a 9-7 team winning the division instead of a 7-9 team potentially Sunday winning the division? I've never been anti-Dak. I've always said the gap between Dak and Dalton, and Dak's better, is not massive. It's not. They both need a good offensive line and weapons to win games. They always say there's trucks and there's trailers. Bucky Brooks always says that. Neither one is a truck pulling their team. They're both trailers. They get kind of pulled by their team and can win if they've got the right pieces. But it's interesting this morning, when you look at Andy Dalton post-bye, he is what he was his first 4 or 5 years, a less mobile version of Dak. But you'd pay him $17 million. Dak wants $37 million. That is the dilemma in Dallas. It's not that anybody hates Dak, but he's not worth twice of Dalton, I don't believe, going forward. Oh, well, looky-looky, we got a birthday cookie. LeBron's 36th birthday today. I occasionally talk about him on the show. He's pretty good at basketball, maybe you've heard. So on LeBron's 36th birthday, he is still the best player. He's still, along with Steph Curry, the best star teammate. He's on the best team, and he was totally uber-focused. I see no decline. Let's see what Michael Jordan was doing on his 36th birthday. He was out of the league, retired for the second time. He was the president of the Wizards. He had drafted a complete bust, Kwame Brown, and he was having a midlife basketball crisis. Should I play? Should I own? Should I manage? He didn't know quite what to do. It is interesting to me that LeBron and Tom Brady have always been very similar, and they're aging similarly. Brady and LeBron today. Totally focused on playing, have no interest in retiring, will not even consider it, are outraged when you mentioned it, are still excellent, are still great teammates, and are still the faces, really, of the league. MJ is retiring much more like Brett Favre. Kind of done at 36 with the grind. I'm over it. I don't want new styles and offenses. I am what I am. We've seen the best of them. Didn't necessarily end with grace. Both could be kind of bad teammates. Favre wasn't great to Aaron Rodgers. MJ wasn't great to anybody with the Wizards. But here's what's interesting. MJ and Favre, despite all those potholes, are more beloved today than Brady and LeBron. And because we're both still, isn't everybody still trying to discredit LeBron and discredit Brady? Oh, it's the system. Well, I mean, LeBron just goes around to the best players. Favre and MJ are more beloved, that's a key word, beloved today than Brady and LeBron. Why is that? Why is that? It shows you how presidents get elected and the power of marketing. Because Favre and Michael Jordan, McDonald's, Gatorade, Hanes underwear, hot dogs, they sold Middle America. We're one of you. Even though Michael Jordan has no interest hanging out with even famous people, forget middle class people. But Michael sold, Favre sold, we are you, Wranglers, Walmart, Kmart, AnyMart. LeBron and Brady do not. LeBron and Brady are aspirational. Expensive washes, expensive mattresses, Uggs, Beats by Dre. Those are high-end products. We're not, we know you can't afford it. You come up and meet us. We're not coming down to meet you. That is the power. The fact that Michael Jordan and Favre had much choppier careers, were not as good at teammates, did not end well, did not end very refined. At the end, Favre was, I'm going to quit. I'm going to retire. I'm not going to learn anything new. Brady's like, give me new, give me opposite, give me teammates, give me. This is what politicians use. This is what marketing does. Is that Favre and MJ are still more beloved than Brady and LeBron. All we do is discredit their careers. I mean, just to show you how different they are, Tom Brady has never been about selling you, I'm one of you. He had his own workout facility in New England. He didn't even work out. He's like, no, I got my own clinic. Gronk, come on over. Edelman. Patriots didn't like it. LeBron's like, I'm not going to be in your TV show. I'm going to create my own production company. I don't even need TV networks. I'm going to have my own. Aspirational. And people don't like that. Oprah got less popular when she lost weight. She was now separating from you. She was no longer one of you. And people for a while didn't like it. Where's Oprah going? Oprah started losing weight. Studies showed I used to work at a network that had Oprah. She was getting less popular. She was pulling away from people. People don't like aspirational people. Too willful, too aspirational, pulling away. Be one of us. Peyton Manning, Oreos. He doesn't need Oreos. Tiger Woods, Buick. He didn't drive a Buick. Derek Jeter, Chevy. He's got a Maserati. But it's and in Michael's instance, it's really the brilliance, perhaps. Instead of a criticism, it's the brilliance of Michael. Michael's not eating hot dogs. Michael's not wearing Hanes. Probably didn't drink much Gatorade. He likes his wine and his cigars. But happy 36th birthday to arguably the greatest basketball player of all time. And the guy who I do think is a much better teammate.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm not a huge fan of hypothetical scenarios for sports radio. I'd rather talk about stuff that just happened or is going to happen or just we're talking about games last night. But hypotheticals are interesting because I do think this is what general managers think about. I think it's what owners think about. I think it's what really smart players think about. What if? So I'm going to throw a scenario at you. Buffalo hosts Miami Sunday. Buffalo's a better team. What if Tua struggles? Tua gets benched the third time. Miami misses the playoffs. And tomorrow's headlines today is not Tua impressive. What does Miami do with the number three pick now from Houston? I want you to think about this. Their defense is great. The number one scoring defense in the NFL. Their special teams are fantastic. How many block punts? Excellent kicker. Their head coach. We know the coaching's great. And the development, I think, on the offensive line, Austin Jackson, I never thought he would be this good as a rookie out of USC. So the defense, the special teams, coaching, great. All that's missing a quarterback, and it ain't Ryan Fitzpatrick, is the answer. If you have the number three pick, Justin Fields is available, Zach Wilson, BYU. They're bigger, look like they're stronger than Tua, more athletic than Tua, certainly more athletic. Now just think about this. Miami will never, under Brian Flores, have a top three pick again, ever. He's just too good. Miami has two firsts and two seconds. They got picks to play with. They can roll the dice on one of these picks. Also, another team, Tua was graded higher than Justin Herbert for almost every team, and he has not been a disaster. He's got 10 TDs, 2 picks, passer ratings low 90s, 65%. It's not a disaster. Somebody would trade for Tua. Somebody absolutely would say, I'm going to take the kid. He's still, every GM in this league, almost everyone had him graded higher than Justin Herbert. But the thing is, when you watch Burrow and Justin Herbert, they've been asked to carry not very good teams. Tua has been asked to just manage what appears to be potentially a very good team. Look at his yards per game. It's last in the NFL among qualified starters. Herbert averages almost 300 yards a game passing. Joe Burrow almost 270. Tua is at 160. And by the way, when he played a good Rams defense, he threw for 93 yards. When he played the Chiefs, he was 28 for 48. He's fine managing the game. But every time Miami's asked him to do more and win a game, that's not really what he can do. And so what if he struggles? And by the way, not just struggles. Josh Allen looks bigger and stronger and more mobile and more dynamic. I've always said it's like the brother issue. It's one thing if your brother's more successful than you and lives in another state, but what if he's your neighbor and he comes home with another Lexus every 2 years and the house is bigger and the yard's landscaped? That's a little more painful. If Josh and Tua are playing Sunday and Allen looks great and big and strong and mobile and that arm and Tua gets benched again, Miami will never have another top three pick. Just a thought. What if he's not Tua impressive? What would you do? You tell me. It's called Twitter. Check it out today.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
It's Wednesday. That means it's time for to get some Nick Wright. First things first, host. So, I got a lot of pushback when I said the Steelers may be undefeated, but I don't think they're very good. I got equal pushback when I said the Chiefs are the most talented team in the league, but I don't think they're playing particularly well, and they're not the best team in the league right now. Buffalo is. Green Bay looks like they could give them a run for their money. I had the Chiefs third on the Herd hierarchy, a respectful third, a very respectful third, a nuanced third. Your thoughts on where I put them, Nick?
You don't do the Herd hierarchy for basketball. You don't do something just like that every week. But if you did, I would wonder 2 years ago where you would have had the 2018 Warriors, when everyone knew they were the best team, everyone knew they had the best collection of talent, and everyone deep down knew they were going to win the title, but they didn't take the regular season that seriously, and so at some points they looked beatable. Now, that Warriors team happened to finish, I think, with the third best record in basketball. The Chiefs are going to be 15-1. Like, this is the thing that I don't understand.
All right.
About your rankings. Mike Florio doesn't have the Chiefs won anymore. A bunch of folks are like, you know what? The Chiefs, who happen to have the longest winning streak in the sport to go along with the best player in the sport, arguably the best coach in the sport, and won the Super Bowl last year, they're like, not winning by enough points. Is that supposed to hurt them when the committee gets together to decide who makes the playoffs because of strength of schedule? Oh, wait, that's college football. So, yeah, you're wrong. I think deep down you know you're wrong. They're clearly the team everyone is chasing, and we're going to see that here starting in a couple weeks. That's what I would say.
Well,
but that's just me.
Now, I said I would vote Aaron Rodgers MVP because I do think Kansas City could be a 7-9, 8-8 team without Mahomes. I think Green Bay would be a mess. But I said this week I moved Josh Allen ahead of Mahomes in two, and the reason I did is in my lifetime – Belichick's worst month and Sean Payton's worst month are September. We have never in the NFL cared about September. Like in the NBA, we don't care about December. And in the end, the last 7 to 8 weeks, Josh Allen's a better quarterback. Last four, he's a much better quarterback. So I put Josh Allen behind Aaron, Mahomes' third MVP. I'm sure that rubbed you the wrong way.
All right, listen. I'm going to reveal something to the audience. And I don't even know if you remember this, Colin.
Okay.
Sometime in the last week, Colin Cowherd and I were on the phone together, and in passing, Colin referenced me in a story he was telling someone else about me as, quote, my best friend, Nick Wright. And I don't even think Colin remembers that, but it happened, I promise, I know, because it was so touching to me, I went and told my wife. I said, Cowherd referred to me as his best friend, and then I saw this, and I'm like, you know what, I don't even like him anymore. Don't even care. Like, it means nothing to me anymore. You're going to say Mahomes is third? He's third in the MVP voting. Okay, so on one hand, you have the guy who everyone knows is the best player in the league. It's first, second, or third in every passing category, and his team's 15-1. That's one hand. And the other hand, wait, the other hand's empty because no other hand matters. He should win the MVP. What we're going to do to Patrick Mahomes, and I'll give my co-host Kevin Wilds credit, who's been saying this, this is going to be Karl Malone in 1997. It's going to be, well, we know who the best player in basketball is. We know who the best team is. We know who's going to win the title. But it would be fun to give it to someone else. And all of a sudden, you have an MVP award. You're like, wait, what? And the fact that you're saying he wouldn't even finish second, at least the Rodgers thing, they're going to be the number one seed in the NFC, most likely. Mahomes should be the MVP. If Rodgers wins it, so be it. If he finishes behind Josh Allen, I think Bill Barr's got time on his hands. I demand a special counsel. I demand there to be a full investigation if Josh Allen finishes ahead of Patrick Mahomes for MVP.
Bill Barr will have some time on his hands, I think. Okay, yeah. So there are teams. Yeah. That, we know there's four or five teams that can win the Super Bowl. You know, Kansas City's obviously among them. Green Bay. I mean, there's a handful. I like Seattle Saints. I think are really good teams. I like Buffalo. And then there's teams that, you know, I think can win a playoff game. But there always is a team or two, and I think Chicago, I would put this in, they may make the playoffs. They're not going to win a playoff game. I don't think they're going to beat Green Bay this week, so they're not getting in. The question is Cleveland. I saw them go through a dry spell middle of the season. I saw them last week, and I look at them and I think, I don't know. Coach Stefanski, first time in the playoffs. I don't trust Baker. Can they win a playoff game, not just get in Cleveland?
Oh, I think they absolutely can win a playoff game. I think the matchup would be very telling in that. I think they might end up getting Pittsburgh, who they're playing this week, but they're playing against Mason Rudolph. They might end up getting Indy. You know, the AFC is really weird right now. Tennessee arguably is the third best team. Tennessee also could miss the playoffs entirely if this week doesn't go right for them and Houston beats them.
Yeah.
So here's why I think this week is incredibly important to the Browns. If before the year we would have told you the Browns are going to go 10-6 but miss the playoffs, I think you'd say, hey, that's a step in the right direction, double-digit win season, Baker bounce back, all of it. But if 10 days ago when they were 10-4 with the Jets coming up, we're going to say they finished 10-6 and missed the playoffs, it's a disaster. So I think they've got to win this weekend against Mason Rudolph, get to the postseason. I do think they could be dangerous because they run the ball so well. Myles Garrett can wreck a game. And when Baker is clicking, when the play-action passing is clicking, that offense really cooks.
Yeah.
But even if they get there and lose, I think it's useful. Just like, to be fair here, for your beloved adopted Buffalo Bills, I think the experience of getting to the playoffs and losing last year was helpful for him. Like, Sean McDermott understood some of the mistakes he made. Josh Allen's probably like, I probably shouldn't throw over the head backwards laterals in the postseason. Take that out of the playbook. So, like, you can learn even if you fail in the first round of the playoffs. So I think it's a success for Cleveland as long as they get there.
I want to end with a basketball topic. I don't know if you heard my elegant open, but I said it is interesting how LeBron and Brady have a much more linear, refined career, better teammates, but they're both very aspirational, and they're not as beloved as Favre and MJ that had teammate issues, coaching issues, didn't very rocky, a lot of potholes. But MJ and Favre tended to, in their marketing, play to the middle America. I'm jeans and hot dogs, and LeBron and Brady
relatable.
Are very, yeah, and I don't think LeBron and Brady are like, no, I don't even have to work out with my own team. I'm going to open TB12. I'm going to have my own clinic. Your thought when I say LeBron is more Brady and MJ is more Favre, is that fair?
No, I think that's absolutely right. I think that there is an element of relatability that the most beloved, super famous rich people have, even if it's all fake. And I'm not saying it is or it isn't fake, but I'm saying, and you brought up the politician's line, we've got a lot of very successful politicians in America right now who rail against coastal elites, but they went to Yale, and they went to Harvard, and they went to Oxford. But they are attempting to be relatable to what they think their constituency is. I don't think it has ever mattered to Brady to be relatable to anyone other than his teammates. And I think to his credit, when you listen to his teammates, they will say he actually goes out of his way to try to be relatable to them, to go introduce himself to the new receivers, even if they obviously know who he is, and to be a great teammate. And I think for LeBron, I do think LeBron is relatable in far as how he talks about his story and coming from nothing to where he is now and opening the school and doing those things. But there is nothing about his professional life that is relatable to really anyone. And I don't think he tries to fake that. And so I agree with that. I also think that those guys are polarizing because they threaten the nostalgia of other of older generations and their greats. So once upon a time, before Brady is clearly past Montana, but when they both had four Super Bowls, folks were threatened by Brady. I believe LeBron is clearly past Jordan, but it's more of a debate than Brady Montana. So he has more people that want to pull him down. I don't think people are arguing Brett Favre's the greatest quarterback ever. He's just like the greatest quarterback that you want to go, you know, have a beer with ever. And I think people will always like that. And I think that hurts Rodgers. I know you weren't talking about Rodgers, but Rodgers is not as relatable as Favre. Rodgers is more aloof and all those things. Also, I find it amazing that the two greatest athletes of my life have the same birthday, LeBron and Tiger Woods. Like, I know maybe that's not that weird, but it is weird to me. The two greatest athletes, arguably, ever in American history are both born on December 30th.
By the
that's
way,
all. Just added that little nugget.
Joy Taylor, what's your birthday?
January 17th.
That's my wife's birthday. And she and my wife are so similar how they view the world. It's crazy. So my work wife.
The best I can tell. Yeah, the only two women who can tolerate you. Best I can tell. So it might be a thing about January 17th.
I'm taking that best friend thing back. I'm rescinding that that thing.
No problem.
All right, buddy. Okay. Good seeing you, Nick Ryan.
See you. Bye.
No, it is. Their marketing is really important. I mean, you can say what you want. I'm not a Trump fan at all, obviously. I don't think, I won't speak for anybody else, not a Trump fan. But Make America Great Again. It was like targeting pockets of America.
It's marketing. You can't argue that it was, hits home.
Yeah, it did.
It worked.
To a lot of people.
Yeah.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
The craziest team in the NFL this year, because we always thought Dallas had talent. It's not they lack talent. We know the Giants have a great defensive line. The Chicago Bears are fascinating. There's some things in the NFL I can't explain. Mitch Trubisky's one of them. I can kind of explain it, but they were the worst team in their division like a month ago, and now they're red hot, and they're scoring a bunch of points. The fascinating thing about Mitch Trubisky is he's 25-12 as a starter with Matt Nagy. Now, that's 68%. So let's not count with John Fox, I think. Let's not count the defensive coach. Just like Jared Goff with Jeff Fisher. Let's wipe that out. McVay Goff is today. It's the reality, and it's fair. So let's look at Mitch Trubisky with Matt Nagy. 68%. That's higher than Matt Ryan, Jared Goff, Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers, John Elway, Terry Bradshaw, and virtually all but 10 guys who have ever played in the NFL at quarterback. It's also higher than Bill Parcells, one of the great coaches ever. 68% is probably higher than Pete Carroll. He'll make the Hall of Fame too. You can win games with Trubisky. The question is, can you win the game, the Super Bowl? I think there's seven teams. That is it in the entire league. Less than a quarter of the league that can win multiple playoff games. Of the current teams scheduled to make the playoffs, seven to me can win at least two games. Green Bay, Seattle, Tampa Bay, and the Saints in the NFC feel like if they won a couple of games, you would not be shocked. In the AFC, Kansas City, Buffalo, and I like Baltimore. I like Baltimore more than anybody else does. These feel like the seven teams in the NFL that can win multiple playoff games. And so here's the question with Trubisky. It's the Dak dilemma. You can win games with him, over 60%. You can even win a division with him. Not every year. Not if you got a Hall of Famer in the division like a Rodgers, but you could win a division if Aaron got hurt or the schedule works your way. Can you win a Super Bowl? Not really. I don't think you can with Dak. I don't think you can with Trubisky. But Trubisky is potentially going to make the playoffs second time in 3 years. Never had a losing season with Matt Nagy. And so it's the ultimate dilemma in the NFL. When their contract comes up, what do you do? What do you do? So the worst thing in the NFL to be is in chaos at quarterback. Everybody gets fired. Like you get 1 year of that, middle of the second year, everybody gets fired. And if you sign Trubisky and Dak, it's not chaos. You're going to win games. And especially if you have a good defense with Dak and Trubisky and they don't have to win shootouts every Sunday. Dallas doesn't have that. When their defense was better, Dak was 13-3. Chicago does have that, and they're winning games. So it's one of these things that Dallas and Chicago, this is something to think about from the owner perspective. They're two of maybe six blue blood franchises, Steelers, Chicago, Niners, Eagles, Giants, Cowboys, that just winning nine games a year, you sell a lot of seats, you sell a lot of merchandise, you get on television a lot, the franchise is worth more to the owner. Don't kid yourself. Jerry Jones, one of the reasons he likes Dak, Dak's been good for business. Remember the anthem stuff? Dak's always been on his side. Dak backed Jerry when the locker room could have splintered. It wasn't a popular move among some teammates and among some of the media that Dak supported Jerry and the anthem stuff. And, you know, Chicago loves their football. You don't have to win Super Bowls to sell that thing out. You win nine games, you go to the wild card 3 out of 4 years behind Aaron Rodgers or Favre, people are happy. I mean, they're happier if you win a Super Bowl, but they don't have many of those. So Trubisky and Dak are – now, I like Dak better than Trubisky. But you get into that dilemma, and also when you pay them both $28 to $38 million, that means they're not going to have as good of teammates. So then the 9-6 becomes 7-9, or the 9-7, 7-9, 8-8, and now you don't make the playoffs. So Chicago is a, you know, Trubisky, I saw one executive say, listen, he ain't Mahomes, but you can win a lot of games with him. And that's what Dave Wannstedt, we had him on yesterday, told me. He was all over the first 6 weeks. He goes, I could win a bunch of games. He goes, Nagy can win a bunch of games. You can win your division with Trubisky, maybe second to Aaron. You just got to play a certain way. Same with Dak. Don't get him in shootouts every weekend. Dak can win. This year, Dak was 1-3. Why? Because he had to win shootouts. He's not built to do that. He's built to win 24-20, not 34-33.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.